Welcome back to Stand-Up Comedy Secrets for Beginners. I'm Ron Temple, and I'm here again with leading stand-up comedy expert Steve Roy. Steve, are there any issues with comedians stealing jokes from other comedians?
Well, I'd like to tell you there's not. But yeah, it can and does happen, and it's really a sad sort of thing. I will tell you this. I have actually been sitting in an audience when a new comedian got on stage and started doing my material.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and I approached the guy afterwards and I said, look, dude, you need to knock that off now.
And he was aware, completely aware.
Well, he's a guy that had come to one of my shows, saw stuff that he could use, and then decided to pluck it. Well, that's not cool. And what people need to know about stealing jokes is you don't want to steal jokes. Now, there is a difference between two comedians in two different areas coming up with the same bit, and I'll explain a little bit of that. When I'm talking about stealing from other comedians, I'm talking about having observed their act and taking what they've done word for word and doing it as if it was their material, and it's not.
Now, it goes back to what we'd spoken on earlier show, was that if it's not you, it doesn't work anyway most of the time.
And that's not true. There are thieves out there that can deliver the goods. And this is one of the interesting things about stealing jokes. A person who steals another comedian's jokes and can get laughs with those jokes on stage says one thing, is the only thing that they don't know is how to develop their own material. If you get what I'm saying, it means they've got every other aspect dialed in. They just don't know how to develop their own material. For whatever reason that may be, writing jokes is too hard. It's easier to steal other people's stuff. The problem that generates for that person is a couple of problems. First of all, the stand-up comedy community is pretty darn small. I mean, if you think about it, there's out of a whole world of people, there's only a relative very few that even attempt stand-up comedy. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So everybody knows everyone else. Everyone looks at everyone else. When you get on that stage, it's just you. I mean, the focus is on you. People do pay attention to that. And for a guy like me who, I was getting paid, but I went to comedy open mic nights to work on new material myself. So all you got to do is attend comedy open mic nights once a quarter, and you know everybody who's doing stand-up comedy or trying, including the old-timers and the more experienced comedians and those kinds of people. So it's a very small community. So if you start stealing other people's stuff, people know about it. And let me tell you, that can really impact your opportunities for progress.
Let's say that there's a lesser-known comic that's funny, writing good material. Somebody steals their material, a little better known, or like you said, somebody that's already dialed in, understands how to do every aspect of comedy except write his own material or her own material. They steal it. They take it public, you know, or it becomes theirs. What happens to that?
Well, I'll talk about this from a legalistic standpoint. You could, especially if you've got your material recorded and there's a date and time on that kind of stuff. And you know, when you do that, you could always hire an attorney to first provide a cease and desist, and you could actually sue someone for doing your act. Now, think about this for just a minute. How much would it cost for you to get an attorney to do a cease and desist letter?
Yeah, more than most.
Well, I'm just telling you, you're looking at $500 to $1,000 just for them to pull up one of their form letters, put your information in, and send it off. And that's the first step that you have to do. You don't just, go directly into court. Now, you may be able to do a small claims court thing on this, but think about what I'm talking about here. I mean, it could be a very expensive affair to get a comedian to stop using your stuff.
Yeah, so if larceny's in their heart, you kind of
well, you know, the thing about it is, and I'm going to tell every comedian, every new comedian right now, you cannot be concerned about other people taking your stuff. You just can't. The real key when it comes to stand-up comedy material is to be able to outpace everybody else.
Just stay ahead of it.
Well, what I mean by outpace is I mean be able to develop more and more and more stand-up comedy material that's unique to you. Now, I will be the first to tell you, the folks who have the biggest problem with people stealing their jokes are the people that are effective at doing the one- and two-line comedy.
Oh, so the joke writers, the actual setup and punch.
Yeah, setup and punch and that kind of stuff where it's not all connected and those kinds of things. Those folks are more susceptible to their material being stolen, it appears to me, than in a topic-based situation where you're doing material that's really unique and specific to you. What you've seen, what you've experienced, people that you've met, different things that you've done, different things that you've seen, it just becomes much more unique and harder to steal.
Well, I steal, you know, in the respect. I don't steal to profit. I don't steal to you. But in classroom, you know, and I'll use Stephen Wright. Stephen Wright, you're absolutely right, is kind of a set-up and punch kind of guy, dry sense of humor. Very funny, and quite, you know, when I'd listen to him, he was great for school. His one-liners were easy to remember, and it was great for school.
Well, you know, you bring up a very interesting point. What happens in the stand-up comedy community proper, and when I say stand-up comedy community proper, I'm talking about the comedy clubs, the comedy venues that are specifically stand-up comedy, that's a whole different environment than the speaking environment. I mean, let me tell you, in the speaking environment, and this is just my own personal opinion, there is not a single reason why a single speaker should have to get up and bore an audience. And the reason I say that is, in the speaking environment, you need only credit the person, and it's all good. you can take a quote from anybody, you know, whether they're a comedian or it's a humorous quote that you've seen. I mean, all you got to do is say, you know, it's like one of my favorite comedians said, "Bloop," and then you do their bit.
They're okay.
Okay, well, okay. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And I've seen some, you know, top, you know, very famous comedians do that too. Use somebody else's stuff, but they do give credit, and I do too. I won't say that I said Stephen Wright gave this to me, but what I would say was, you know, go ahead and use that. I took it from somebody else.
Or, well, that's a little different. But here's the thing: in the teaching environment or the speaking environment, you don't have a bunch of comedians sitting out there.
That's right.
Watching what you're doing.
And I'm not doing their entire bit. I'm just picking pieces and parts that work for wherever I'm at in my lesson plan. Or
in my opinion, in the speaking environment, it's an almost a no holds barred kind of situation. it's just so easy because there's so much already done comedy material out there, and you don't have the same level of originality that you do in the stand-up comedy community, you know, because you're really expected to produce original stand-up comedy material that other people haven't done. Now, that does not mean that you're not going to hit on the same topics that other people do. Driving, married with children, pets, going to the grocery store, buying an appliance, whatever it is that you're going to do.
Right, and it's still original, though. The material you can tell is an original material. We've used a couple of names ourselves during this series, you know, and given the comedian credit for it. Brian Regan was one that we've mentioned a few times, and Brian Regan hits all of those subjects that you just said, and basically, but it's so original to him. It just seems like it's his. I think it would be difficult. It would be difficult for somebody else to actually take it on as theirs. But I can see where they could.
It would be pretty darn difficult to do Brian Regan's stuff for most people. I'm not saying his stuff can't be stolen, and it probably has, you know. But you just can't concern yourself with that. Just keep in mind, you know, I'm talking to new comedians here, people who haven't even developed 5 minutes of material. But once you've started to develop material, and especially material that works, there's a hunger to continue, to grow, to add comedy material to what you're doing. I mean, it's It doesn't just end with the 5 minutes.
And let me add this. If there isn't a hunger or a drive or a want, need, then you're probably not going to do really well at this anyway. I mean, this is a tough business, as we went through. This is tough. I'm one that actually knows it's tough in the respect of watching you, knowing I wouldn't want to do it. I wouldn't want to continue to do that. So you have, but I love to teach, and I'm willing to do anything necessary to get back in that classroom and teach, but I'm not willing to do all that's necessary to do stand up. Now, of course, that's not my passion, but you do know that these young comedians that are really passionate about this and take the time and hit the open mics and do all the and write and check and try new material. It's got to be a passion.
Well, and you know, you got to recognize when the difference between when somebody has stolen your material and somebody has come up with something similar. And I'll talk about both of those things. But when it comes to stealing material, I'll tell you some of the stuff that I've heard from comedians that I knew. I knew people who were feature acts and the headliner was doing their material before the end of the week.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that kind of thing. Now, it makes it really tough when a headliner is taking from feature and opener folks because, you know, they've got more time, they've got more experience, they have more credibility. So if they're plucking from the lower troops, if you will, that becomes a real problem. But still, in this business, people know if somebody's a thief and they're a blatant thief. And let me just provide this. There's two aspects to this that are kind of important. There's a lot of gigs out there that are run by other comedians. And a lot of people don't know this. One-nighters and other rooms that are set up. I ran a couple of comedy rooms when I was actively performing. And let me tell you what, I wouldn't have a thief on stage. I wouldn't have a thief in my room. And that's the way a lot of other comedians who run rooms operate. So if you get this reputation that you're a thief, it can severely crimp your style. It doesn't matter how funny you are.
Well, let me bring in something that I heard you say I know there's an explanation for this, but when you say an opener and a feature, they come before a headliner.
That's correct.
So the headliner, if he's stealing and they get up and tell their jokes and he tries to tell them too, doesn't that?
But here's the thing. Remember, someone in the feature spot is trying to move into the headliner spot.
Right.
So they're more apt to not be doing the same material as another comedian. And that's a good that you picked this up. What in this particular instance, the person did a different set than they did before, and the headliner did their material from the day before. Now, it wasn't a lot, but it was 4 or 5 minutes of what they didn't do for this particular audience. They did it for the audience the day before, but now the headlining comedian took advantage and is repeating their material that they did the day before, not the day of. You get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Because you're right, a joke twice told is not funny. It'd be stupid to to do material that's already been done. But these thieves are quick about this kind of stuff. You just gotta be careful with that. But again, like I said, no one in this business wants to develop a reputation as a thief.
Well, karma, you know, let's throw in a little bit of the outside universe coming in on them. You said it perfectly. What comes around goes around. If they have a rep as a thief, there's a lot of places they're not going to get a play. If they're not getting to play those places, they're not making the money. They're not getting the recognition. It's got to hurt them.
Well, let me tell you another little aspect. You know, I didn't have such a positive view on the internet as far as stand-up comedy information goes. But as far as stand-up comedy thievery, let me tell you what I've seen personally. I've seen videos that were a montage of a stand-up comedy thief where they played a clip of the original comedian who did the clip, and then they play the clip of the thief doing the exact same thing. And then they take another comedian, and they do a clip of that stuff, and then they take the same comedian and they're doing the exact same stuff.
So that is karma at a higher, much higher level.
Well, I'm just telling you, social media, people are watching what everyone else is doing. And man, if you're stealing other people's stuff, it can be out there. Look at some of the trouble that people have gotten into because of social media.
Yes. Oh, yes. And, well, let's just pick up. Well, there's so many current items in social media that you wonder why we've paid so much attention to them. But it's exactly that. We're paying attention to a lot of these current social events because they keep, what's it called in Facebook? They share it.
Oh, yeah.
And they just share, and all of a sudden it's been shared with 5 billion people.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is one of the good things. I believe that this sort of kind of organic monitoring, for lack of better terms, has had a good impact on people stealing other people's stuff.
And you did something you said earlier in your career when you actually were sitting in the audience and watched somebody steal your stuff, went to him afterwards and said, knock it off. And there's a good chance he did or didn't. Wouldn't matter too much because, again, it goes back to what you were saying. There's a part of it that's somewhat flattering. You know, I hate to say that, but something somewhat flattering that says that your material is good enough to steal.
Well, yeah, yeah, that's not a very good consolation there, Ron. I'm just telling you.
I know, but it the thief is the thief. You know, it's almost got to be something cosmic or something to come back on him. Or until they realize how devastating that really is. But there is a piece that said, you know, that I heard, I know you didn't hear this, but I heard this, that, yeah, your material was good enough to steal. So you had to, as a young comedian or as you were developing material, just stay ahead of it.
Well, I never worried about it because I always had more comedy material than stage time. Always. But that's because of the way I approached it, the way I developed and delivered my material and those kinds of things. So I really didn't worry about other people taking my stuff. Plus, my stuff was pretty darn personal to me and those kinds of things. Now, there's another thing that happens that's not stealing, but there's instances where comedians will develop the exact same stand-up comedy material. I call it parallel thinking. And it usually happens with very easy sorts of topics or ideas or concepts that don't have very many other aspects that you could come from a different angle. In my stand-up comedy act, I had a thing about Braille on the ATM machines. Yeah. And my issue wasn't the Braille. I thought that was a great thing. It was the Braille on the drive-through ATM machine.
God, I remember that joke.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, that's something that should be cause for concern. If nothing else. It's like, wow. I mean, I understand catering to the folks who can't see, but come on, man. But here's what happened. There was a gal who approached me after, this was, golly, 1997, 1998. I did a show. And she was a comedian, and she approached me and said, hey, how long have you been doing that joke? And I said, since 1993. And she went, oh, okay. Now, did she quit doing the joke, which was almost exactly the same as mine? It went from the same perspective, the whole thing. And I had never encountered this person at all. And I know she had never seen my show because she was from out of town. So those types of things happen. I remember I constructed a bit, and I was pretty happy with this bit, about the, you know, the automatic traffic ticket situation they have where they take a picture of your license plate if you're speeding.
Right, or run a red light.
Run a red light or whatever the deal is. Okay, yeah, that's the one. And they send you a ticket in the mail. And so my bit was something like, you know, I set this up, told them about it. I said, they sent me this ticket in the mail. So I said, okay, I'll be slick. And so I sent them a picture of the check. And so they came back and sent me a picture of the warrant for my arrest. Okay, so, I mean, and this was amazing. I thought, man, and I hadn't taken this bit on stage yet. I thought, man, this is killer. Well, guess what? I'm watching TV. I'm watching stand-up on TV. I watch a guy do the bit.
Same bit.
Now, he had never seen me. I had never done the bit on stage. Ever. It was just something I came up with, and I saw it on TV, and I went, okay, well, that's gone. Whatever work I did on that, it's done. Not only has this guy done it, he's done it on TV. So I can't compete with that.
And you knew immediately that it was something you probably shouldn't do now.
There was no way I was going to do that. You know, if I ever found out, which that was the only time that I can think of that it happened, but if I ever found out that I was doing something that somebody else was doing, I could knock it out. It didn't affect me, you know.
Let me sneak out of comedy for a second, because you brought up something that is kind of universal, and it's that same thinking, you know, that people have the same thought at the same time. And there's some weird statistic out there that says that everybody, you know, let's say I all of a sudden think of some really cool idea, something that needs to happen, you know, a fancier golf cart or something in my head says, you know, I think that people would love to have this. And at that same moment, there's some statistic that says 75 people on this earth had the same idea.
Oh.
And then this statistic carries on to the fact that only one out of a bazillion, just this metric measurement of a lot, would actually act on it. But that's why we're in the grocery store or we're at Walmart or we're somewhere going, oh my God, I thought of that. And look at somebody carried it out. Because we didn't. We just thought of it. And so you're saying the same thing with comedy, and I didn't realize it, but somebody in
Maine
could have the same idea as you, almost the same, maybe spurred from the same kind of event, you know, whatever's happening at that time, social media or TV, and then you have a thought, you develop a bit, and then sure enough, you're given the same bit very similar time.
Well, it's parallel thinking. I mean, you know, in the mid-80s, I was stationed in Guam, and I was stationed with a guy who was big into remote control airplanes. So I'd go out with him, and he just loved that stuff. You know, he'd do his airplanes and fly them. And there was a lot of jungle there in Guam, and his airplane would go past the tree line and crash or land. Or I don't think it landed. I think it pretty much crashed. And it was like, okay, well, how do you find this thing? He goes, no problem. I got on the console. I've got this. And you'd push a button, and the thing would start going, doot, 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 so that you could go and find it. And I thought, oh, my goodness. This is killer technology for people who have a tendency to lose their keys.
Absolutely.
You could put a little thing on your key ring that goes, doot, 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 and be able to find your keys. Because I wasn't... older and wiser, and I was younger and stupider, and I would lose my keys. You know, that hasn't happened in forever, but it just happened. I thought this was a great idea.
Right.
Within 2 years, I saw it advertised on TV.
Yeah.
Which means someone else had already thought of this and was able to get it through the production, that kind of thing. Yeah, those kinds of things happen, but that's not stealing material. That's just parallel thinking about a particular item, topic, observation, or whatnot. Now, I'll tell you some of the silliness that I've seen in the stand-up comedy community. I've actually watched people approach other people and go, you did a stand-up comedy joke? I mean, yeah, you did a space shuttle joke? I do a space shuttle joke? You need to knock off your space shuttle joke. Now, here's the problem with that. I had seen both versions. They were two completely different jokes about the space shuttle.
Right.
But
somebody felt that they still
they were compelled enough to say, hey, I do that kind of joke you're doing about the same topic. Topics are not exclusive content. If that was the case, we'd only have about 20 comedians anywhere. You'd have one doing the driving. You'd have one that does the relationship stuff. You'd have one that does the whatever. You kind of get what I'm saying? There's no... You have no claim to a topic. It's not about that. What makes stand-up comedy material original is how you paint it. I mean, if you think about art, I mean, I'm talking about art that you look at on the wall, paintings.
Right.
And you could have a painting of a car and another painting of another car. Are they the same painting?
No.
No, they're not. Even though you can still see the wheels, you can still see the windshield, you can still see everything. Well, what makes them different?
Well, the individual you're dealing with this, that decided that topic base should be proprietary, was it a new comedian or was it?
No, it was somebody who had been done it. It was somebody who had been doing it for a while. So that was pretty much one of those Jethro moments, you know.
You just got to go. Okay. But there are going to be, and I said control freak, I probably shouldn't say it that way, but there are folks that believe that they can control other people's behaviors.
Well, you got to understand why comedians can get so hyper about material. For most comedians, they do this the long way, man. It's like trying to trim a hedge with nose hair clippers. And so when they do get a grip of material that actually works, it was hard earned, even though a lot of the time they had to spend with it was a lot longer than it needed to be. And that was self-inflicted.
So this is like protecting your children.
Absolutely, dude.
Yeah, they're really proprietary. Okay,
well, I told you this before. One of the reasons why I don't have a lot of stand-up comedy videos online, and what I do have is just 30-second or minute clips, there's a reason for that. I don't want people taking my stuff. I'm not going to have any part of that. Now, if I was in the game, if I was still in the game, I would have longer clips. If an agent, a promoter, a booker wanted to see a longer clip, especially one that's unedited, and we had talked about that before.
Do they really call them bookers?
Yeah, I would have that. You know, I would have that and be able to send that, but that's nothing that would be available to the public. I promise you that.
I got to jump in there, because that booker, you said it a couple of times, and I don't know if it's your Texas accent or what, but I keep hearing booger, and I'm going...
No, it's not booger, it's booker. Booker, Ron.
It catches me every time I go, actually, they're bookers. That's
good. You get your finger out your nose, dude, while we're doing these things. I can't believe you're doing that.
Okay, I strayed. I did want to bring up another point, too. You said that topic-based material could be, you could do it the same topic. It's not proprietary. You can make, and you said relationships. And the first thing I thought about is, what's her name? Barr.
Roseanne Barr?
Roseanne Barr. Oh, my God, Roseanne. Why that stuck, I don't know. But Roseanne Barr, she did relationship. She did relationship comedy that had to be personal. It wasn't the kind of relationship most of us had, you know. So the topic was definitely relationship. And I remember one of my favorite jokes, and I'm just going to repeat it. Hopefully, Roseanne, you don't mind me repeating this joke. But it was her husband asking for some Cheetos. And she goes, my God, it's not like he can't lift the cushion himself.
The couch cushions himself. Yeah. I mean, oh, my goodness.
That was just a great joke. But it's definitely on the topic of relationships. Not quite the one you normally hear from some of the other comics.
So sure.
I get the whole idea of the topic, and I can see it was still hard earned. You know, they earned it. These are their children in most respects. This is, and I've seen you, and I've seen other comics come up with just a great a bit that works really well, and they can repeat it and repeat it. And I'm that guy that can actually listen to it a couple of three times and still just. In fact, just when you brought up the Braille, the ATM to ATM Braille, still funny. So it's you know, it's nice to have material that lasts also. So
oh yeah, I mean my wife and I went to see Brian Regan, and people were actually clamoring at the end of his show to do his vintage stuff, and he did, and it killed.
Still,
I mean, it was just that good, just that powerful. But like I said, I would tell new comedians, don't worry about people stealing your stuff. I mean, you've got to be confident enough in what you're doing. You've got to be able to produce new material all the time anyway. And if it's very personal to you, it just makes it that much harder for anybody to lift any significant amount. They might be able to take a line or two. But that's as far as they're going, man. And as long as you're there first, which matters, hey, I say don't worry about it. But it is an issue. Make no mistake, it is an issue, and it's a hard issue to combat if you don't know what you're doing. Or I feel really badly for the one- and two-line comedians, because they tend to get clipped more than anyone else because it's one or two lines. You know, people can remember that easily, blah, 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 you know.
Well, I said the one-liners are great. Henny Youngman and I, there's a lot of them I use for, you know, because those one-liners come in so well in teaching that, you know, I notice that I have too many of my students leaning onto their elbows and I can wake them up a little bit with the
sure, sure. So absolutely.
I do, and I do get, but I can't imagine somebody actually taking it and believing that it's okay, even though it's, you know, because it's a whole different deal when you're up.
People don't value other people's stuff. I mean, you know, what is it that used to be said? There's a house broken into every 17 seconds. And my comment is I'm glad I don't live in that house. You know?
Exactly right. Stay out of that house. There are thieves, and they're going to be thieves in every realm of life. So
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And stand-up comedy is no different. It's just you really have an advantage when you can develop stand-up comedy material basically at will.
All right, let's change gears. Let's move into another area that it's since I'm having a difficult time creating my own material, and I'm thinking about stealing it, and I know I shouldn't. Should a new comedian consider buying jokes if they're in that situation?
Okay, well let's talk about this. Who would they be buying the jokes from? Okay, now, and that's kind of an important thing, and I'll tell you why I say that. I say that because I think it's a bad idea for a comedian to buy jokes. And here's the reason why. You've got people out there who will sell you jokes. I mean, they're just generic, plucked from the air jokes. As a matter of fact, online, you can go to Fiverr. There are people that'll write two jokes for $5. Okay? Now, based on what we've talked about before, can you identify any issues with what I've just talked about?
Well, I'm going to go to a couple in my own head from what we just talked about. One would be that if I develop the material and it's good, it's my baby. I'm not selling my children. Okay, so there's one. So if I really am good at what I'm doing, I'm probably not selling it. The other one is there's a good chance if I'm selling it for $5 for two jokes, I'm probably stealing it from somebody else.
Well, okay. Now, here's an interesting thing. If you buy two jokes or however many jokes from this mystery person, you don't know where they came from. They could be these people that scour hundreds and hundreds of stand-up comedy videos. So, and unless you've looked at all these and you know that that's someone else's material, you don't know it is. But here's some of the more deeper problems that I see. First of all, who's writing the jokes? Is this a comedian? Probably not. Have they been on stage? Probably not. Have they ever developed a stand-up comedy routine? Probably not. So what you're getting is jokes that are written for a reader from a writer who thinks that what they're writing is funny. Not to be consumed by an audience, but for another reader. So that's a big issue, man. That's a big problem. Because, again, I go back to this thing, writing is a completely different communication medium than talking and speaking and using all these other avenues that give a comedian their real power on stage. So when a person sets out to buy jokes, what are they buying? They're buying some generic nonsense. It can't be very original because the person has not been on stage. They're buying jokes and the person hasn't even seen who they are. Doesn't know what they look like, what their demeanor is, how they talk, how they enunciate words, what their comedy timing is. None of that. They don't know none of that. Here's some jokes, buddy. Where's my $5?
Have you known anybody that actually bought?
I have known people who have bought jokes, and it didn't help.
Okay. They couldn't develop it on their own. And they couldn't deliver it on their own. So.
Well, let me put this into a perspective from a professional level. Okay. I'm sure you're well aware that every single late night TV show It doesn't matter if it was back in the Johnny Carson days. It doesn't matter if it's Jimmy Fallon or whatever. There's a team of writers who produce jokes for the monologue. You're aware of that, right?
Right. I was going to bring that up, the fact that we know that jokes are written. So what makes it different?
Well, but here's the thing. And here's the unseen thing that the unsuspecting new comedian doesn't realize. When those people produce that comedy material for the monologue, for the late night show monologue, they know how the person looks. They know their demeanor. They know how they talk. They know the inflections that they use. They know their body language. They know how they say certain things. Do you understand what I'm saying? So when they're producing material, they're producing it with an already established entity in mind.
Right.
So they already know.
Jay Leno, and they're going, he can deliver this.
Well, this is, material is developed for that particular late night comedian. Are you with me?
With you.
I mean, it's just, it's tailor made for them, but they know all these other things. So
and that comedian, Jay Leno, we'll keep him. Jay Leno then would also get the material and go over it and see if he felt that he could.
Exactly. What he would do, and you're right, it's a process. He would go through the material and would visualize himself delivering this material. And he would pick the things that would go, go, okay, I'm going to use this one. This one's out. I can use this one. This one's out. Now, Jay Leno went a step farther, and people don't know this, but he used to go to the, I want to say it's the Comedy and Magic Castle. And he would take his late night monologue material, get time on stage, and actually present it, deliver it in front of a live audience before he would do the taping for the show, which was also in front of a live audience. But you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, and in fact, I've heard that from others that also would take it out to, in fact, one of them, I can't remember who, I think had a club basically set up for his purpose, for that purpose.
So
might have been Jay Leno.
I'm just saying it's a process. Now, a real professional comedy writer wouldn't touch a comedian unless they've seen them perform. Even if they were brand new, they wouldn't touch them. I don't care how much they're willing to pay. Well, that's not true. If somebody said, I'll pay you $1 million for a joke, you don't have to watch my videos. Like, okay, well, just deposit it into this account. But what I'm saying is, as far as really producing comedy material for somebody, you need to know about that person. That's one of the reasons why a lot of accomplished stand-up comedians end up in writing for shows, especially comedy shows. Because not only do they know about the words, but it's more than just structuring words and sentences on paper designed to be read. They take the character, who it is, and produce comedy material that's suited for that person and their demeanor. Now, you had brought the Roseanne show there. Okay, John Goodman, he's got a different delivery persona, how he rolls, than she did. Her kids had a completely different demeanor, attitude, how they were presented. So it's not just the words that capture how these people are. You got to take in the whole package. And that's one of the problems with buying jokes when you haven't even been on stage. No one's looked at your stuff and you're just buying jokes off the shelf. It's just a bad idea. It's a waste of money, in my opinion.
Well, and upcoming comedians usually don't have a lot of money, so they're getting what they pay for.
That's not necessarily so. I mean, that could be the case. There could be somebody who's an attorney or a doctor or an accountant that's trying stand-up comedy that could pay somebody. Now, I tell you this, someone who's for real when it comes to comedy writing, they're going to charge you some dollars for this.
It's not cheap.
No. I mean, you're going to pay, handsomely for a bit, much less a single joke, and whatever single jokes that they do are going to be tailor-made for you and what you talk about, the way you talk, and those types of things. It's not just the words on paper, and that's what people don't get. So, do I recommend that a new comedian buy jokes? Absolutely not. Now, a comedian may get to the point where they need to get involved with someone else to help them because they're too busy performing or whatnot, and this can help shortcut the process. But still, we're dealing with a pro. We're not, you're not dealing with somebody from Fiverr who's going to do two jokes for $5.
For $5. Okay, let me use that, the idea that funny attorney. I mean, every time in court, the judge is going, man, you are funny. You ought to go do stand-up comedy. He's already got a really good career. He has plenty of money in the bank. But he wants to continue doing his lawyer stuff while he's setting this up. The process, now he has the money. The money's not the object. He just really has gotten the bug and wants to be a stand-up comic. But he didn't have the time to write the jokes, just as you said. So I'm guessing from what you just talked about is that he would find somebody that could write for him, but it would write for him. It would be somebody specifically that would come in and basically become almost a full-time job, seeing his act in court, realizing that he is funny, he's got talent, and start writing jokes.
Well, that's the important part is they would need to somehow visualize this person, because when a comedy writer produces comedy material, it's for a character. And when I say a character, I don't mean some phony made-up thing. It's whoever that person is. Everybody's different. They are their own character. So that comedy material needs to be tailored for that character.
Well, let me use you. It would be hard for somebody to write you jokes based on comedy out of New York. You couldn't come off and pull off New York jokes. But soon as, well, you could, but most can't. But when you take you and they look at you and they go, you know what? I've got to keep him kind of in that comedy, you know, central, you know, southern part of the United States. You know, let's talk about his, you know, his mother and father. You know, we'll find something. Right.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that because I didn't put any limits on myself about what I could or could not talk about. You know, my act changed and evolved as I evolved as a person, and the things I talked about evolved. Like, I think I mentioned this before that when I did my one-man show in Hawaii, I had 15 to 20 minutes of brand new material just about being on Hawaii, and that was just from living there. But I would tell anybody it's not difficult if you know what you're doing to produce your own very original and very funny material, but you need to factor in, you know, more than just the words and sentences. And that's, I hope you understand why I'm adverse against people trying to buy jokes.
No, it really, the only ones that really should buy jokes are those that already understand who they are and how they perform. And it just becomes a process for them.
And you know, the reality is even when a professional comedian buys material from another comedian, it still may need some editing and tweaking by the comedian, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. You know, I often would get a lesson plan when I was substituting for another professor. So I'd get his lesson plan or her lesson plan. And I'd go over it, but I knew I wasn't going to deliver their lesson the way they do. I mean, I knew that their lesson was good. I had to get the basic material covered. I had to do what they asked me to do. But when I lectured or when I performed for them, I'll say performed, when I was in the classroom, it became me. So I'd tweak it. Now, every once in a while, I'd actually have to ask that person I was subbing for, you know, this is the way I would do this. Is there any objection to this in your classroom? And they'd go, usually no. You know, no, or,
sure.
You know, or just drop that completely and show a movie. No, I'm kidding. That's what I'm hoping for. But that's exactly what we, so it's very similar in that respect, right? It's got to be for me. I couldn't get up there and give a half, I could not take his lecture and just do word for word and be effective in that classroom. I'd put everybody to sleep in like,
well, that. You've got a little different situation in the teaching environment because you've got that, what we call mandatory content that you have to give. Right. You know, the humor part is kind of extra. So, and it's expected for a teacher to be able to come in and take over for another teacher with the exact same lesson plan. So, I don't know what to tell you about that. All I know is that buying jokes is, as a general rule, is a stupid idea, especially for new comedians who haven't even been on stage and have nothing to show, even a pro comedy writer.
Right. Yeah. This is so clear now that you do realize that it's a very specific, very, very limited amount of people that could even really write jokes for you. if it was me that wanted somebody to write jokes for me, it'd still be a very limited group, and it'd probably be expensive as heck.
Yeah, pretty expensive. Yeah, no doubt.
All right, let's jump over to you. This is directly, I'm going to ask you directly. Do you ever get contacted by anyone who wants to write and sell jokes to comedians?
Let me tell you what. I had to write a blog article about this because I would get these requests all the time. Hey, I wrote some jokes and I think it's funny. How do I go about selling these to comedians? And I'm thinking, oh, man, you're just about eat up with it. And so I wrote a blog post about this. Let me just tell you, man, there are people out there that have this vision in their head that they can just sit at home, produce material on paper that they think is funny, and sell it at will. Now, you might be able to do that on Fiverr. There's going to be plenty of people that have never heard what I'm talking about, and they'll go, wow, two jokes for $5? I'm all over that like a bad rash. But the reality is there's some problems there. And what are the problems? Well, here we go again. Here's an individual who's sitting at home, has not been on stage, never developed a stand-up comedy act, never taken that act up on stage to see if it would work or not, yet they want to sell their stuff on paper to somebody. Like it's, oh man, yeah, they'll read this and this is great. Let me tell you what, that is fool's gold.
It's just not happening.
Oh, no. Well, there's a couple of main problems. First of all, they have no skin in the game, just like I said. No skin in the game whatsoever. They don't even know how to structure a stand-up comedy act. They don't know how to even structure a joke. Because remember, what's the magic number of laughs you need to get?
4 to 6.
4 to 6. Well, if you're just dealing with words on paper, which is what these people are dealing with, well, you've got to know what you're doing in order to structure that stuff. It's a real major issue. Now, what I tell people to do is, you know, I provide some information on why they're not going to have the kind of success that they want. Now, if they really wanted to do this, what they would need to do is go out to an open mic night, observe comedians who are actually performing, new comedians, because a new comedian's weakest spot is the material that they develop, and help some comedians out. And if they were able to generate major laughs from your involvement, let me tell you what, that kind of stuff would go around like wildfire. Yeah, I went from nothing to being able to slaughter this crowd. It's all because of Bob. Dude, do you know how fast a person could establish themselves as a stand-up comedy writer if they really knew what they were doing?
Well, and that goes back to the question I asked you. Did you ever, personally, did you ever step into that arena?
Well, I had actually written material. I'll tell you a story. I had actually written material for some of my students. The ones that I was teaching out of my apartment, remember I told you about that?
Right, you're beginning.
And I would have them bring in material and that kind of stuff. And there was a gal that she brought in some stuff. And, dude, it was all about her divorce and her kids. And it was just, I mean, this was stuff that I needed to take a Prozac after reading it. I mean, that's how just, I was like so sad. You know, she got beaten up by her husband. And there was nothing funny about this. It was just kind of a...
It was the tragedy.
Yeah, it was kind of a journal of the tragedy, you know. It's like, man, oh, my God. And so I took what she had and actually formed it into a stand-up comedy routine. And here's the kicker. She did it on stage and got laughs, man. But she was so out of it, she couldn't appreciate that she was getting the laughs. She just was so caught up in this tragedy that she was involved with, a relationship tragedy, that didn't even matter that I did that, you know, that I was able to produce material for her that worked. She just couldn't duplicate it.
Now, I assume from what you're saying is, even though she delivered and she got the laughs, she didn't stay in the business.
No. I mean, and she got decent laughs too. I mean, I had some good stuff that I had made from what she had given me.
Now, it was kind of your material. Could you have resold it?
Probably, but that's not my game. I mean, there would have to be a certain kind of person that would fit, and then I'd have to go back and adjust it if it didn't quite fit. So, you know, stand-up comedy materials like shoes, man, they either fit good or they don't. You know, there's really no in-between.
So let me go back into that a little bit, just a little bit, is that I've known you a long time. You've known me for a long time. And let's say I decided I wanted to get on stage. I'm going to do it. Steve, I'm going to do it. I'm going to jump on stage. Could I come to you and say, help me out, buddy?
Well, the thing about it is with you, I have seen you in front of a class. I have personal interaction with you. I know how you present yourself. I know how you talk. So from that perspective, yeah, I mean, I could totally work with that.
Okay, well, just to let you off the hook, I'm not doing that.
because, see, I'm not helping you either.
Okay.
We're just doing this all for speculation here.
Yeah, it was all speculation. Okay. All right, well, it's always this is what we do all the time, folks. As soon as we hang up from this, we end up going right into our own routine, so bear with us. All right. Anything else on that, Steve?
No. I mean, I people could write and sell their own jokes. I mean, if they really wanted to get into it, but this whole concept of sitting at home and being able to sell jokes by email is, to me, it's right there with Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny.
Okay. But there are really bright guys that can write.
Sure, sure. As a matter of fact, for TV shows, you'll notice that they tap comedians. And you might not necessarily know who the comedians, but they've gotten to a certain level and they've demonstrated that they can deliver the goods. And they tap a lot of those folks for writing gigs when it comes to comedy TV shows and whatnot. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we've run out of time. But there's much more to come, so don't miss the next episode when we reveal more stand-up comedy secrets for beginners.